Hey listeners, it's Jessica, and you're listening to another episode of Love Thy Neighbor. Thanks for tuning in. I know it's been a few weeks since my last episode was released. Hopefully in the next few weeks I'll be able to push out more episodes. Life's just been a little crazy, and I think we all can relate to that. Life can get really crazy sometimes, but then we have to figure out what's the most important and, you know, filter out the things that aren't as important. And so thanks for sticking through time to be with me. In this episode, I am speaking to the awesome Presley. He was one of my first followers on my Instagram account, Love Thy Neighbor series. And he just has such an amazing wealth of knowledge on a lot of different things, especially on anti-racism work. And I'm really excited for you to get to meet him. And so stay tuned, and I'll see you after the episode. Hey neighbors, it's Jessica, and you're listening to Love Thy Neighbor. Tonight, I am speaking to the phenomenal Presley. He has been one of my earliest followers on my social media account, and so I'm really excited to speak to him tonight. So welcome, Presley.
Hey guys, it's definitely a pleasure to be on this platform today. She stated, I've really been a big supporter of this because I love what she's doing and all the information that she's getting out there. I look at everything, so I'm a very strong follower, believer in what she's doing. I am a black male. I work at 24 Hour Fitness, assistant general manager, and I also have my own business from home. I run a hedge fund with a partner of mine that we started a while ago, and I basically do both jobs. I am also married to an Italian woman named Jane. And that's really a lot about me. I've finished school, got a bachelor's degree, FAU, and I'm just here today to share some of my perspective.
What was it like growing up as a Black American male in your predominantly white society, right? Like, what was it like growing up in your neighborhood? Were there a lot of people of color in your neighborhood? And then maybe on a greater scale, what was it like growing up in America as a Black American male?
Interesting question, of course. In my community, it was a lot of Black Americans. I lived in definitely a Black community. So growing up, I never really – it's hard because now that looking back on it, I never really, like, looked at race like that under this magnifying glass that I look at it today. Looking around, you see a lot of white things. So it's not immediately noticeable when you're a kid. But I feel like all these things, like, sink into your subconscious. You see everything, like television, cartoons. You look at, like, Christmas and angels being depicted as white. And, I mean, you have even Jesus being depicted as white, or God, in TV shows and cartoons. And what that does is, to kids, you don't really think about it much, but it honestly diminishes, you know, the sense of worth for, like, a person that's black. You just feel like if you don't identify as white, like all these other things around you, then you're like not normal or you're not natural. And it's almost like you're in a bigger context, you're not American, because American seems like it's almost like a synonym for white because of how they normalize it, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as I've talked to people before, they really think, they've said that media matters because if you show more representation within media, it's going to encourage people to maybe feel more confident or feel like that they can aspire to be a certain way or to have a certain job. Like, do you think that media representation is getting better for Black Americans at least?
I think so. I watch a lot of TV with the wife once I come from work or once I have some downtime, and we watch like Chicago PD and Chicago Med. All the Chicago series we watch together, and Grey's Anatomy and all the women shows, that's what she calls it. but we watch them, and I really enjoy the shows, but there's a lot of, like, Black representation, Black women, Hispanic women, Indian women, Chinese, all different types of women and men on those shows, and I feel like it's positive representation. So there is definitely negative representation, which I feel like, or I should say negative over representation. So, like, a lot of representation that you see, of course, a robber can be either black or white. And on a TV show, a robber is going to either be black or white, but you're mainly seeing black robbers and you're mainly seeing black muggers, even though the statistics wouldn't match to show that for all these representations that you're seeing on TV, all of these should be black or should be white or a specific color. So you're seeing overrepresentation of black or colored people as problems or troublemakers. And that's an issue that, you know, people don't initially think about it, but it's another thing that sinks into your subconscious and it affects you later. It creates bias and creates bad things in the mind that affect how you interact with other people.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, as someone that grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, there aren't a lot of people that have interactions with specifically black people. And so if they go and turn on the TV and they see black people portrayed in certain roles over time, that's just something that I think is that goes in their subconscious, and then they start to think that that's how they all are, right? And then the current rhetoric, even with against people that are Hispanic, they think that they're all either like Mexicans and that they're going to come steal jobs just because that's kind of what's being fed to them. So it can be very dangerous for sure.
No, 100%, and that's exactly it. People start to just believe what they see on television, and television, people forget, is not real life. I know a lot of black people because I grew up with a ton of black people around me. I know a lot of Hispanic people. And realistically, a lot of these people you meet are some of the most hardworking people that you'll see. Like my dad came to America when I was 3 years old. We came here. And my dad had four jobs for a year just to make ends meet for us so we can have a better tomorrow. And he just did what he had to do. And my mom also worked. So we were in a situation where at the time, just full disclosure, at the time, I personally, at 3 years old, growing up till I was 11, 12 years old, I wasn't even legal in this country until I got everything situated. And my parents literally took care of all of that.
That's incredible. Where did they immigrate from?
We came from Haiti.
Oh, okay. Awesome. And so, I mean, you probably don't have a lot of memories from Haiti if you were that young when you came here, but they came here just trying to get a better life, what they, you know, than maybe what they thought they would have in Haiti.
In Haiti, things back then were better because today you see a lot of the turmoil, but still there was more opportunity in the United States to make something of yourself and to become something. So they moved over here, and even though all the paperwork wasn't situated, they made sure that they got the jobs that they needed. They worked under the table for certain things, and they got paid what they got paid, and they just worked as many jobs as possible so they can afford a house. They got the car that they could afford. They put me in school and got me through school and basically painted me to become the man that I am today.
Well, good for them. That's incredible. Do you think that they had a hard time adjusting to American life? Also, the fact that, you know, if a white person was in a grocery store and saw them, they would kind of put them in the box of being Black American, but behind the scenes, they were actually Haitian, and so they had grown up with different customs and ways of living. And so was that difficult for them, do you think, that transition into American life?
I would assume that it was harder. Sometimes I talk to my mom and dad about it and ask them how things were. Realistically, from what I understand, they were more quiet because, you know, you don't know the culture that you're coming into, and you don't want to do anything wrong to have eyes looking at you that you don't want. You know, they basically tried to go under the radar, tried to do as much work as they could to create for us. And they had multiple kids. I was just the kid that was able to come to the United States the earliest. So being in, I guess, American culture, they just tried to get by. They didn't make noise. They just were very quiet, and they kept their customs at home because they raised us very Haitian. Of course, I went to school and I learned to speak English. I remember going through all my ESOL classes because I couldn't speak English, and the kids would make fun of you because you're like, you're an ESOL, you know, you're not smart, basically. But realistically, looking back at it, I knew another language and I was able to learn English, which I'm very proud of myself for, you know, being younger and going through that.
Well, nobody gives bilingual people enough credit, because I only know one language, and I've tried learning Spanish and it's so hard for me. So it's like, I think it's very insulting when you see these news reports of someone calling out a person of color for not speaking English, and they need to speak English, because it's just so hard. And I even have friends right now where they're trying to, you know, learn English better, and they're having a hard time. And it's like, it's just a shame that there's that negative stigma that is placed on them.
No, 100%. And people just get a lot of disrespect and a lot of flack for it. But it's like, you know, people are trying. It's not like they don't want to speak the language, but they speak a lot of other languages. So, you know, people think in another language and then try to decipher it into another language, and it's slower. Some people, because they speak so many languages, they have to slow down to try to understand what they what's being said in English, or try to process it in their minds. And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. Even to this day, my dad speaks better English than my mother, but my mother really tried. You know, she really tried. She'll speak on her own. I'll try, if I'm there, I'll always try to decipher for who she's speaking with, but she'll get it across, and she won't, like, hesitate. She'll just try her best.
Mm-hmm. So, and you said that you grew up with mostly, you know, people of color around you in your neighborhood, right? But so as you got older, when did you start, did you have, like, any instances of racism towards you? Maybe, like, when you went into college and then you were exposed to being around more white people? What were your experiences around that?
Well, growing up black in middle school, in high school, you most likely you form a group of friends that are black, because you're in a black neighborhood. You most likely go to a school that's predominantly people of color or darker, because that's how the neighborhood and the whole tax system is set up, with the school that's attached to it. But once you get into these groups, you hear people talking about these things, and then you get to that moment where you're like, oh, that's what that is. Because, like, you'll have an instance where something happens, maybe between me and a white person, and if you're not well versed on, like, racism or bias or prejudice, then you won't know why the person treated you like that. You'll just know that you were treated badly, or you know that you were treated wrong. So once you get into these groups of black people, the black kids, they talk about it. And then, you know, I hear them, I jump into the conversations, and we literally start talking about these things. I literally was reading a book called Why Are the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? And it got down to the root of it. And it's basically saying that, so I, as a black person, would be, you know, go through an experience of racism. And I would have, potentially, I would have some white friends, I'd have some black friends. I'd go to my white friends and say, hey, this is what happened to me. And they'd be like, you're sure? Because that person, they're really not like that. They're not racist. Like, you gotta like, get that out of your mind. Maybe you're looking at it the wrong way. But then I can go to my black friends, and then I can say, hey, this is what happened to me. And then they'd be like, man, I'm so sorry. Like, no, I know how that feels. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, how did you respond? Maybe this is what you could do to feel better. This is what I did. So they kind of, the black folks, they control you, because they understand what you're going through. And that's what the book was kind of explaining, as to why the black kids kind of huddle up together, because they understand each other, whereas the white kids didn't really kind of understand what was happening, or didn't want to accept it, or per se.
Yeah. And so it sounds like what you're saying is, just based off of what you were interpreting from the book, that if more white people, if, like, somebody came up to them and said, I had this experience, if more white people were to pause and say, oh, that's really horrible, I'm really sorry you had that problem, then don't you think that it would be easier for people to kind of intermix and hang out, because there'd be a lot less, like, weird energy that the white people would be giving off?
Right, because it's almost like taboo to tell a white person your experience about racism. Unless you're, like, extremely close to the person. But it's almost like taboo, because if it wasn't taboo, if somebody black could just say to a white person, hey, look, this is what happened to me today. Like, this person was really racist to me. And the white person wouldn't you know, it's like as soon as the black person says racist, the white person is like, oh, my God, I can't do anything wrong. I have to make myself like not a part of that person because that person is white, too. And I don't want to be considered just like that person. And instead of, you know, trying to figure out, OK, what did they do that was racist? And oh, my God, that's I don't want to do that. How did that make you feel? And how do I, you know, learn from that personal experience that you had with somebody else that I can be a better person as well? And I can actually learn about what racism is and how it affects people of color and black people as well.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of white people, if they're accused of saying something racist or even being racist, they go into shutdown mode because white people are taught that, like, racists are these scary people that lived, you know, way in the 1800s, and they had slaves, and they would beat them and lynch them and all this stuff. And so I think instead of just recognizing that racism truly it's this large spectrum and that there are people that are as horrible as this, you know, the people back in the 1800s that were abusive slaveholders, you also have people that are very comfortable doing little microaggressive stuff and live ignorantly, right? And so but the thing is even saying or doing microaggressive things, that's still on the spectrum of racism. So you still need to own up to that.
No, you're 100% right. From my experience, you know, I've experienced racist incidents that are like, you know, the what you'd call, you know, major racist incidents. But in my lifetime, it's not been those incidents that have stressed me out the most. Like those incidents are like, okay, you're a racist person. Like you had this outburst and you said this word and you acted, you know, extraordinary. You acted basically crazy. But for me, like you just spotted yourself out for what you are, and that's okay. Like you are who you are. Be that. Embrace that. That's fine. You're a super racist person. But it's always been for me the people that are like. I'll give you the people that are actually there when that happens, like something crazy racist happens. And then there are a bunch of white people around that maybe these people say to me, you know, I care about you. You know, I'm there for you. I love you, all these things. And then, you know, you go through these racist things and these people just kind of look at you like, oh, yeah, maybe you should have been more nice or maybe like you shouldn't have got them upset. Or what did you do to like start this? And they almost ignore the racism that exists, and they make you the issue. Like, how did you start it, or what did you do to cause this to happen to you?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I'm sorry that you've experienced the extreme acts of racism, but also even just like the murky gray areas of people still being racist, but like you just not really knowing where they stand because they just aren't, you know, they don't take a side.
Right. And playing the fence to me is the worst thing that you can do because it's like, you know, you're going to say the words, I'm not racist. But to me, that doesn't exist. You're either racist or you're anti-racist.
Yeah.
So you're doing things that are racist or you're doing things that are, you know, blocking out those racist things that other people are doing. You're either for it or against it. There's no in the middle. I'm not racist. That doesn't exist.
Yeah. What was your dating experience like? So you said that you're married to an Italian woman.
Right.
What has that journey been like for you guys?
Well, do you want to know about who I dated prior or like different races that I've dated?
You can if you want.
Okay, so my first girlfriend was in fifth grade, which I don't know if that counts, but she was Mexican, and we just kind of like, do you want to be my girlfriend? Yeah, sure. And then it was just like a thing for like a few weeks, I remember it being. But then after that, it got in middle school. I feel like that more counts because I'm more cognitive and I kind of understand more so, not 100%, but more so what's happening. And in middle school, I dated a black girl. And then in the beginning of high school, I dated another black girl. I think she was Bahamian. And then after that, I dated a girl that was Italian and black. So she was mixed. But of course, you know, people see her as black. She's just light skin. And after her, I actually dated her for 6 years, and after her, I ended up dating my my wife, who's fully Italian, and she's been the light of my life ever since then.
So as you were dating, like mostly women of color, and then you switched and dated a white woman, did you get any judgments or judgmental remarks from people that were your friends or family? Did she get judgmental remarks or comments from her family or friends? And does it still even exist even to this day? Because I know that oftentimes in interracial relationships, oftentimes people kind of give the man of color, if it's a man of color and then a white woman together, that's seen as like less acceptable than if it was a white man with a woman of color type thing. So do you think
right.
that stereotype kind of still exists where people, you know, treat men of color with white women like worse?
I think it 100% exists. My family was very accepting. And maybe you could say that it was more accepting because of colorism, because in mm-hmm. Haiti, you know, if somebody is lighter of skin, then they're viewed as having more value. So there are white people that live in Haiti, and they're viewed as the higher class. And a lot of Haitians look at them like, okay, you know, they're better than the darker Haitians. And that's everywhere. You can go to Dominican Republic, you can go to Brazil or anywhere, you know, colorism kind of is just a thing. So maybe the point could be argued that maybe my parents viewed that like that. But I honestly don't think so. And, you know, I know who my parents are, and they just liked her. They really liked her for me because of kind of how she was. She was very quiet, and she was very, like, nice, genuinely nice, just a genuinely good person. And they kind of saw that she was kind of good for me. But I do think that exists. So, like, I think the statistic, if I remember correctly, it's more likely that a black man will date a white girl than a white man date a black woman. And I think it's like 36% for black with a black man with white girl. And for a white man with black girl, I think it's like barely 9 or 10%, if that. Yeah. And I think it's because of the power dynamics, because in America, the white man is like supreme. If we're looking at like how the hierarchy works, it's kind of like white man, white woman, black man, kind of black woman kind of thing, if we're going to exclude everything else out. And because black man is so close to black woman or white woman, it kind of connects there. But white man being at the top and black woman being at the bottom, that's rare for it to happen. So which would explain why the statistic is so low. But I feel like we get more flack, even though it happens more, it's more common, we get more flack because the black community looks at it like, you know, we've been through so many things together. Like you talk about racism, you talk about the redlining, all the horrible things that have happened in the past, slavery, all the horrific things that have happened to black people. Black people have gone through it together. So black men and black women. And then you turn around today and maybe, you know, they look and see a black man marrying a white woman. And then they think to themselves, look, all these things that, you know, we've gone through together as a race, you want to turn around and kind of marry somebody outside of the race. And more than that, you want to marry somebody that is a white person that kind of like their ancestors potentially were a part of that. And, you know, I listen to the arguments people make, and I hear and I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, my wife is who I fell in love with. I dated whoever. At a certain point, I felt like I only dated black women because I felt as a kid, that's what I was supposed to do. But when the world was more open for me, it was like, you know, you can date whoever you want to. You date whoever you talk to, you have a bond with, you fall in love with, and that's what happened with me and my wife. And so I can't see myself putting a limit on myself because of all the things that have happened in the past of just saying, you know, I can't date somebody that's white. To me, it doesn't really make sense. I'm going to date who I have the strongest connection with, whether it be a black woman or a white woman or Hispanic woman or whoever it is.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point of an experience I had in the summer. I have a friend who is black woman, and she was telling me how there were a bunch of white, well, was it white guys? They're just a bunch of people giving her flack that she, you know, she wasn't dating white guys. And I thought it was really interesting how it's like, you know, white people, like speaking as a white woman too, like it's not like if you have a group of white people that they're encouraging others to date outside of the race. Like that conversation barely, rarely ever comes up, right? But then, you know, but then when it comes to maybe a black woman that's, you know, one of the few minorities in a predominantly white culture, and she's being told that she needs to be more open, and, you know, that way maybe there will be more white guys that will date her, that I think it's really insulting. And they're just different expectations, right? It's like white people don't even think of that, you know?
Right. You're right. People put expectations on different groups of people and different races of people, like what they should and shouldn't be, should and shouldn't do. And black women, I feel like, have it the worst. Because there's all of these expectations on top of them, what they should and what they shouldn't do. And I think at the end of the day, people just need to stop telling other people what they should and shouldn't do, and let people do what is good for them.
Do you think that the recent surge of the quote Blexit of, you know, people that were voting, black people that were voting Democrat that now are, you know, voting Republican, do you think that's been a difficult hurdle that the black community has had to deal with? Because it's kind of like, it's been this expectation that you vote a certain way, and then when that doesn't happen, then people think you're betraying the race type thing.
That one's interesting. I don't know if people are starting to go with that fad because, just like you said, like they've been voting a particular way and they're expected to vote that way. So they're like, you know what, I'm not going to vote this way because I'm being brainwashed to vote this way. But then again, I mean, there are two parties. We have a two-party system. So it's kind of like in the independent, which never wins. But so basically a two-party system. And you're saying to me, okay, Democrats have never done anything for black people. That's what I hear. You know, and you can make the argument that a lot of Democratic nominees have done a lot of bad things to black people, which I won't argue. I agree. I've seen it happen. We've seen it happen in history. But to tell me that the Republican Party would be better for black people, that's, you know, that's insulting someone's intelligence.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I feel too. I know that there are people like, is her name Candace Owens? Candace Owens?
Right.
Yeah. I know that there are people like her. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's like they genuinely believe in conservatism, which I think would be one argument, or if it's that they're trying to do like a middle finger to the system and be like, we haven't been helped, and so we're trying this new thing, seeing what happens.
Right, and to me it's nonsense, because if you're looking at the Democratic Party and you're saying, look at all these horrible things that the Democrats have done to us, also don't forget to look at the Republican Party and say, look at all the horrible things that Republicans have done to us, because there have been Republicans in power that have done horrible things to black and minority people or minority groups. So I just don't get it.
Pivoting now. So when I had first, just so the audience knows, when I first reached out to Presley, he was actually interested in talking about some ideas he had to help white people that are interested in being anti-racist and doing anti-racism work know, like, what to do or what not to do. Because as a white person, just speaking from my experience, sometimes it can be hard to, like, navigate where your place is, knowing if certain questions are appropriate to ask. And so I thought it would be interesting to turn the time over to him and just hear what he had to say. Like, what are some realistic things that white people can do where we're not being white saviors, but we're actually like doing good anti-racism work?
Okay. So to answer the question, I think it's a complex idea, but a very simple question to answer. I think the answer to the question is not – I feel like a lot of white people, what they tend to do is once they realize that there's this big problem of racism, they want to save it or, you know, save the day and stop it immediately. And realistically, if racism could be stopped immediately, I feel like it would have been stopped immediately already. If you're white and you want to do something that's beneficial, especially for the black community and minority communities, then the first thing that you have to do is learn. Because there is a lot to racism. Like, once you begin, you're like, okay, this is racism. this is what it is, black people being treated poorly because of their skin color. But how complex is it? The hierarchy, like what's it, you know, you have white men, you have white women under that, you have, you know, then black men and all these people are treated differently. You have sexism intertwined. So you have a black woman being, you know, combined facing racism and sexism at the same time. You just have to do a lot of your own work as far as kind of like understanding what you're up against, because black people have, I feel like, spent a lot of their time learning, understanding what's happening to them, and then trying to make white people understand. And to be honest, that's been majority of my time. You know, you have the debates with people, and maybe it's not even a debate. You're just trying to explain to a white person, and all of a sudden they cannot fathom what you're saying to them, because no, all my friends are nice. My friends are not like that, or I'm not like that. I'm a good person. And people think if you're labeled a racist, then you're automatically not a good person, which is not true, in my opinion, not at all. Like you can do things that are racist and still be a person that's a good person. You can have good motives, and you're just a part of the system. Because realistically, what is it? The system overall is the racist system at work. And we are just people inside that system. So if you work inside that system, most likely you've done things that are racist before, even without you knowing. You kind of just work within the system. You know, that's why they call it systematic oppression or a racist policy. You know, laws are created, and because those laws are created, they disenfranchise a certain group of people. And then once that certain group of people is disenfranchised, then these ideas are created like, oh, these group of people are lazy. And they don't want to work, and that's why they're in that particular position. And you forget that a policy was created that placed them in the position that they're in. And then after that policy was created, ideas were created to kind of keep that policy in place, and that's what ultimately creates racism. Oh, yeah, they're lazy. They don't want to do anything. But realistically, what you want to do is learn. You want to learn about these things that are happening around the world. You don't want to run and just try to save the day or run and just start talking immediately. You want to learn from people of color, follow people like you that have created this page that make it easier, maybe easier for white people to kind of take it down if you're listening to another white person that's saying these things. And you can see that you have allies that are white also, because it's not just black people that are fighting racism. It's white people all around the world that have picked this torch up, and they're helping. Allies, and we're all in this together, and we're trying to rally against this racist system. But the racist system creates racist people, so we have to first learn about the system, learn what it does and what it creates, and then eventually we can take it down all together. Think about if you have a kid that you're raising. Every white person that's raising their kid today, they stopped and said, oh, wait, maybe I should tell my kids about race. Maybe I should introduce it. Maybe I should teach them a little bit about race, even though you may not. Okay, you may say, I don't know how to even introduce it. I don't know how to explain it to them. So look it up. Like, look for resources to make sure that your kid is not going to be part of the problem or part of the solution tomorrow. So if everybody was doing this racial work with their children at home, not even out in the stores or anywhere, just with your kids at home, the world would change in the next generation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it also just comes down to exposure, right? So, like, for people that are in white communities that there aren't a lot of people of color around, if they're having a hard time finding exposure, meaning, like, finding a neighbor that's a person of color that, you know, you can just start being friendly to and say hi to, you can also, you know, find movies and TV shows and, you know, podcasts or whatever to, like, slowly start introducing your children to, so that they go, oh, wait, that makes sense. Or, oh, there are more people that look like me, and they're great people, and they're doing great things, and it is possible.
Right. No, 100%. You have to get yourself out there. You have to meet, you know, go up to the black person or go up to the Hispanic person, talk to them, find out about them. And the more you find out, the more you'll say, oh, wow, this is a different culture. This is a different way of doing something. But that difference does not make them inferior. That difference just makes them different. And that's all differences are. Like, I have a specific way that we do things in my culture that we grew up in. You have a specific way in your culture. And those differences don't make any of us better than each other. They just make us different. And the differences should be beautiful, and the differences should be learned about. And the more that that happens, the more that the world becomes closer together. We all feel the same kind of things. We might go through different things. And again, these things that we're going through, they're just all different, but we feel the same emotions from them. We feel sorrow. We feel happiness. We want our kids to be successful. We want to hold good jobs. We want to be successful ourselves. All of us in the world have all these aspirations, and they're very similar, even though they may be different jobs or different ideas of what success is. But at the end of the day, we all get that same, you know, satisfaction from what we're doing. We kind of have to learn about each other and respect and kind of cherish what we have to offer to each other.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. That was so well put. I was wondering if you could share what some of your hopes are for the Black American community in particular, because so often we hear of these things going on, like the Rodney Reed case. Fortunately, he wasn't executed.
Right.
And we hear about police brutality against particularly Black men. But what are your hopes and dreams for the future for Black American citizens?
Well, I mean, for sure, 100% for all this stuff to stop, for Black people to stop going through what they've been going through for God knows how long, centuries. I just want Black people to have great jobs. Black people for a school to be called a Black school, and for that school not to be viewed as negative. Because, you know, you say, oh, yeah, there's the black school across town. Yeah, my kid's not going there. Oh, why? Because it's a bad school. And bad school and Black school kind of are like, they're synonyms. I would love for Black people to, I would love for Black people to be viewed better, because Black people work hard. Black people do what they're supposed to do in this society. They play within these roles, this culture that has kind of like set kind of grasp around them. They do what they can. People work multiple jobs. You know, my parents, the story I've told, Black people are successful. Black people work all these different positions. So it's hard for me to say that I have hopes and aspirations for the Black community. I would better say that I have hopes for the American society as a whole, because America kind of has to decide if America is going to be a white society or America is going to be a multicultural, multiracial society. Because if America is going to say, well, you know, we're a white society, then everything that we see going on right now is not a problem. We see the racism. We see the, you know, Black people being shot, police brutality, just all this crazy stuff that's going on. Then it's not a problem, because, you know, we're saying, This country is built for white people. So if you're not white, then yes, you're going to go through these experiences. But if we're going to say it's a multicultural, multiracial society, then we have to question these things that are happening and say, well, my hopes and my aspirations for tomorrow is that America can treat Black people as equals across the board.
And would you say, as a final note, would you say that treating each other equally is the key to helping someone, particularly a white person, love their neighbors of color better?
I would use both words, equal and equitable, because, so how can I say this? We all know there's been a history of discrimination. So how do you take a history that's already happened, a suffering that's already happened, and just say tomorrow everything is equal? So basically what I'm saying is the past has to be rectified. So all these things that have been done have to be rectified for things to be made equal. So you have to be equitable with the things that people have access to. You have to understand where it's needed most and, you know, push those resources towards that direction because of the things that have pushed these people down in the past, if that makes sense.
Do you think that reparations should be given out and there should be even more programs allowing for people of color to obtain certain jobs or internships?
100%. I mean, reparations to me shouldn't even be a question. I mean, you think about history and you think about Abraham Lincoln, after freeing the slaves, he was supposed to have reparations paid then because he was giving 40 acres to every black person that was a slave. That was supposed to be passed. And when he was shot and killed, the next president that took over, basically, instead of giving the slaves anything, he actually paid the slave owners a certain amount of money for each slave that they lost. So yes, that's old. Reparations is something that's old. It's not a handout or given out like a lot of people like to paint it as. So I 100% believe that that's something that's old and the country has to do so it can continue to move forward.
Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Please feel free to leave me some feedback on the podcast page. You can leave me some stars and rate the episode. You can submit feedback. And also, if you would like to appear as a guest on this podcast series, you can always email me at lovethyneighborseries@gmail.com. And I would love to listen to you and listen to your story. So I'll see you next time.